I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rich Scioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
There's a lot of media meltdown after Trump's jokes at the Al Smith dinner. I'll share some of that with you as the show continues. Dinesh D'Souza will join us live on video YouTube stream in the later portion of the hour. And this is our happy hour brought to you by the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. You have your very own promo code to use. It is my name, Scioli. Put in Scioli and save 25% when you book a midweek stay from now through the end of the year. Book direct at GrandHotelCapeMay.com. Holding up here in my formerly pangolin-stained fingers, the book Lies My Liberal Teacher Told Me, so you can see it on the YouTube stream, Debunking False Narratives, Defining America's School Curricula. The author, of course, is our friend who joins us every week, the one, the only, Dr. Wilfred Riley. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. Always good to be back on the show.
Yeah, and I want to show up the nice inscription you wrote for me in the book. I appreciate that very much. Rich, love doing the show weekly. Hope you love the book and look forward to the event, which we need to do. Stay unwoke and hope all is well, Wilfred Riley. So I appreciate that very, very much. What's new in the world of woke these days, and how's school going?
Well, I mean, there's a lot new in the world of woke. We just saw Kamala Harris melt down at a normally aggressive interview, although I don't know that if that counts as woke. The state of Minnesota has a program that's devoted on bringing gay children out into nature with an anthropologist named Heron. Lot going on. In school, things are a little more mundane. I'm still just teaching constitutional law, so that's what's going on there.
Well, it's kind of an important thing, constitutional law, not for nothing. So I appreciate you doing that. You know, it's kind of important. I want to talk to you about nukes, by the way. But Andrew Sullivan wrote a piece about, he said that Dr. Rachel Levine must resign. A case study in politics and ideology overruling science with children as victims. And what's interesting about this, of course, is Andrew Sullivan's gay. And, I mean, that's not that shocking. There are a lot of gay people who find all of this stuff with kids and transgender stuff and all of this stuff to be just absolutely completely what it is, barbaric and horrific. And he wrote this very scathing piece about her, how she has been advocating for all of this and even removing any age limits whatsoever as her role as the Undersecretary of Health for the Biden administration.
Yeah, I mean, so first of all, I mean, Rachel Levine, I think we both said her kind of in passing. Rachel Levine is a dude.
I didn't mean to say her. I was reading from his piece, but yes, Rachel Levine has a penis. Yes, correct. Rachel Levine is a man.
Rachel Levine is a 200-pound former small college football player who decided that he was a woman and walks around in kind of sensual, stereotypically female outfits. So first of all, I don't think that someone in charge of health and human services in the United States should be insane. I think that this is a major problem. This is the person that represents us in international conferences about mental health. And I believe that was the same division that had the crazy luggage thief guy in it.
Yes.
I forget his name. But there's a famous picture of them together where one of them is wearing like a tight, sexy little frock and has a bald head and a big ginger mustache. And the other one, Rachel Levine, is wearing boots and has sort of his hair curled long and blonde, like draped down his shoulders. And I've gotten that picture sent to me by Arab and Indian and Nigerian guys every time I've criticized other countries online. Like, look what you guys are doing. So that is Rachel Levine. And I mean, I think Andrew Sullivan's basic point is correct. So obviously gay people, whatever your own opinions on homosexuality might be, gay people are not in fact pedophiles, gay people are not in fact transgenders, gay people are just individuals that happen to be attracted to the same sex. And many people like Andrew Sullivan, who's a big, tough guy who writes in New York, when they look at what's going on in society, I mean, there might have been an initial tendency to say, okay, people can do what they want, because that's what gave rights to the gay community. But when you start doing things like suggesting that you remove kids' penises and so on, there's an inherent human ability to say, no, that doesn't make sense. So I'm glad to see that from Andrew, who I'm friendly with.
Yeah, and he wrote the following. I'll just read a little bit about this. He says, I remember very well how all my gender insecurities as a gay kid vanished after puberty. So I urge any gay man or lesbian who, as a child or teen, was barred from his basic human right to be brave and start the lawsuits. It's the only way. No gay men or lesbians will come to your aid. Kamala Harris and the gay group sure won't. LGBTQIA plus billionaires will sacrifice any number of gay kids if it means not being called transphobic at a dinner party. And of course, he's referencing here, you know, gay parents suing and saying, like, you know, like this is wrong. And I look around at what was once my community and see such incredible cowardice and indoctrination that it makes me despair at what we have now become. A movement that began as a crusade for sexual liberation is now sterilizing gay and trans children and removing their capacity for orgasm forever. A movement that began with defending gay men and lesbians is now sacrificing a generation of gay kids at the behest of trans extremists and critical gender theory. Forgive me for the passion, but this amicus brief set my head and heart aflame. What has happened? What is still happening? It's the worst attack on gay kids since Anita Bryant. By this time, the danger is coming from inside the house.
Yeah, so I mean, he actually gets into a very deep point here, which maybe because I'm not gay, I don't want to say don't care about, but that I've thought about less. But probably the majority of the people that are being transitioned are simply gay.
Right.
So I mean, in practice, when you look at a kid, kids can't at least consensually have sex, and until 15, 16, almost none of them are. You know, you're not in the military. There's no way to convey how masculine or feminine you are except for sort of behavior, if that makes sense. So when people say, I have a trans kid, what they mean is I have a boy that likes pink. And the surgeries, the puberty blockers, the hormones, those are then administered starting between ages 9 and 12 to these gender atypical kids, to these boys that like pink. And I think at some level we all know that if you're a boy who really fancies the color pink and enjoys exclusively playing with girls, you're more likely than average to grow up to be gay. So when you look at some of this stuff, like there's actually a decline in the population of lesbians in the United States. The USA has traditionally been about 1.7% lesbian. I suppose you just ask people. I don't exactly know how they measure that. But that's declined to about 1.2% over the past decade or more, at least among young people. And one obvious reason for that is that so many lesbians are opting to transition. I mean, this has been done. A recent study by Nudo Harm found that this has been done 16,000 times at the level of surgeries or a full-on course of hormones to people under 17. So when you add in everyone that transitions later than that, I mean, you're talking about hundreds of thousands of people. And yeah, a lot of those people would probably just grow up and say, okay, I'm not totally typical, but all I realized is that I like girls. So that's an interesting point he's making.
Yeah, it very interesting when you break it down like that. No doubt about it. And, you know, I was looking at something that's going to be happening in my state of New Jersey. So we're about to go through the NJEA conference, which is ridiculous in and of itself, because they're going to have this conference in Atlantic City and they're going to wind up getting all tipsy and everything like that. And then they're going to proceed with how they want to indoctrinate our children. And I'm frustrated for a number of reasons. But number one is because we have to make sure we have child care, and these teachers are all going to be drinking on our dime. But let me read you some of the programs they have laid out here on the Friday session under advocacy. Queering the curriculum, equity in identity, that is targeted towards high school. Social justice Shakespeare, let's reimagine the bard. The Black Panther Party you never learned about in school. That is going to be target audience high school under the Rethinking Schools subject. I know that neither one of us can ever imagine the extent of crazy that goes into planning these sort of things with these people. But like, what would the Black Panther Party you never learned about in school be about, you think?
Well, I mean, it'd be about the Black Panther Party and what heroes they were and so on down the line. Now, the Black Panthers were an interesting group, kind of a combination of a street gang and a political movement. And they handed out free lunch in the ghetto and so on. But I mean, the Panthers also killed a lot of people. And I don't think that a course, I mean, this is a couple pluses, couple minuses, you know, but I don't
think
that
good, you take
course,
the bad, you take
you know, the Mau Mau Revolution, you know, they really cool hair, pro-black, killed 10,000 people off the war.
But they were very pro-Second Amendment, so there's that. Just saying, you know.
Well, actually, that's one of the few positive things about the Black Panthers. They had a program designed to encourage black war veterans to buy guns and so on. I mean, what they thought the guns were going to be used for, that's the stuff in the air. But, you know. But I guess what I'm saying is that I don't think, even to the joking extent that I'm doing now, that a course like this is going to present a nuanced view of an American revolutionary but doomed movement. I think the idea is going to be, well, this is authentic blackness. It's a pity we lost these great heroes. And I think that because we've seen courses like this before, Cesar Chavez, the beginning of the union movement, so on. They're actually, there's an entire group called the Zinn Education Center, which is named after Howard Zinn, the guy I criticized in my Lies My Liberal Teacher Told Me book, but they have something like 80 of these supplementary curricula, so you can learn about the Young Lords Puerto Rican street gang. You can learn about, you know, John Brown, the admirable but crazy abolitionist who was killed after trying to start a revolution against the United States, and on and on and on. Did the CIA sell crack in the 80s? This kind of thing. And I think the deeper problem here, kind of getting to the point, is that the people charged with teaching our kids, like the secondary educators and the college professors, lean about 93% to the political left. They're very often crazy Marxists, and that has real impact. Like, that's actually one of the bigger issues in the country. We don't need high school kids being taught about gay Shakespeare.
No, we
can
don't.
They read?
And, I mean, no, we. Yeah, and like social justice Shakespeare, let's reimagine the Bard, and then queering the curriculum. Why does the curriculum need to be queered? Why can't we just have the curriculum be the curriculum?
Well, I mean, I don't think the curriculum needs to be queered. I think that, I mean, I think we're on the same page on this one. I guess my main point is just...
But we're always on the same page, you
problem.
And I. I'm asking the hypothetical, like, why, like, why, like, what, like, we don't need this, but they're pushing this anyway. And I don't even really understand what it means, queering the curriculum. I don't even really get it, but anyway.
Well, I think, so this is actually a really big problem. I don't know if I emphasized that just now. I mean, so between higher education and secondary education, you've got around 90% of the people teaching our kids falling on one side of the political divide, and probably 75% of the time buying into a specific ideology that you or I or any adult business person would think is crazy. So the reason you want to queer the curriculum is that you think the traditional American curriculum is white supremacist and patriarchal and so on down the line. It comes from a society that you think is evil. That's yeah. why we talked the other day about, is it still Columbus Day? There are people that think that the discovery of this country was a bad thing. And if those people are just radicals participating in some witch's coven on the weekends, or, you know, sitting around Sproul Plaza in Berkeley beating on buckets, nobody cares. But if they're high school principals, it suddenly becomes something we all have to notice.
Which is why your book is so important and why I recommend it to everybody. Lies My Liberal Teacher Told Me. And you actually have a line number 6 is all about European colonialism. But I want to switch gears, though. I want to talk about nukes, all right? Because there's a story I read the other day, and you have a whole chapter about this. American use of nukes to end World War II was evil and unjustified. I've actually been hearing more of this now, and I think ever since the movie Oppenheimer came out, it's kind of renewed the conversation. It was an excellent movie, by the way. I highly recommend it. But the other thing, too, is that we're also seeing now you've got these big tech companies like Microsoft and Google embracing nuclear power because the massive power requirements for artificial intelligence, you know, they need them. So there's an interesting shift happening in one respect where it's like you've got what would be typically left-leaning groups that are embracing nuclear power, but at the same time we're revisiting this lie that the United States was evil and horrible using nukes in Japan. And also, too, just in general, there's still a lot of fear-mongering around nuclear power in general, and even though it's, you know, there's no zero emissions whatsoever, but you still have a lot of climate zealots on the left who just want nothing but wind and solar, basically. So a lot to unpack there. But
yeah, so first of all, I mean, thank God for the atomic bomb. I mean, there are moral and amoral ways to look at the world, and it's fascinating to discuss moral ins and outs with your priest. But if you are a secular leader, you're a businessman or a soldier, the general question you're asking, once you've eliminated those options that are just too evil to contemplate, and there aren't many of those during a war, the general question you're asking is, what's going to get the best result for me and my people out of the things that we can do? So the argument that we should not have dropped nuclear weapons on Japan is difficult to even comprehend. If we hadn't, we just would have invaded Japan, because we're not going to let Imperial Japan or Nazi Germany survive the war. So that would have meant a land, sea, and air invasion of the Japanese islands by the USA, Britain, and maybe Russia. And the Japanese are the samurai. I mean, they're generally considered the greatest martial artists in the world. I mean, there would have been guys behind every bush with spears and guns. We would have lost 1 million men. The Japanese, because I doubt we would have been gentle in our revenge, probably would have lost 4 or 5 million people. There might have been mass rape, cities burnt. This is what we saw when Russia took Germany after incredible resistance. So we opted to avoid that by dropping bombs on two cities that were at least arguably military targets. I don't find that indefensible even under today's law. But nuclear power is a weird one. I think that because people associate nuclear power with nuclear weapons, and the two are very different. It's like the difference between a gas stove or a barbecue grill and a burning building to some extent. I mean, there are all kinds of control vectors built into a nuclear power plant. Well, I mean, all of our power sources are big things that get hot.
Right.
So, I mean, if you're talking about oil, we frequently, I mean, I was a kid for the Exxon Valdez disaster where an oil tanker, the captain was drunk or something, but hit an undersea rock, I believe, and ruptured. So a container ship's worth of oil just spilled out off the coast of Alaska. Yeah. I mean, they were hauling in dead seals and oil caked seabirds for weeks, and nuns and people like this were trying to gently wash them down. You know, soap companies were donating dish detergent and so on for that purpose. I mean,
penguins.
Yeah,
I mean, remember that, penguins that is, covered in dish soap. I to this day, I remember that. You know, and the captain was off his was drunk driving a big cargo ship. I mean, I hate to laugh about it, but that's what happened.
You know, the captain had a brandy bottle near his hand. I mean, it's one of those great disasters.
I mean, you're not on a pontoon boat with your buddies on a Sunday and, you know, on the Delaware River. Like, you're driving a freaking oil tanker, all right? Could you put the bottle down and turn the buffet off? I'm just saying.
Yeah, like, well, I mean, it's one of those questions, like, what's the worst that could happen? Well, thousands could die and you could pollute an entire state. Yeah, well, you know, life is a risk. But anyway, so the captain, yeah, anyway, but like, so when people say nuclear power poses some risks, I mean, a nuclear power plant like a nuclear bomb could destroy a sizable chunk of a city. That's also the case with the fuel air explosion you'd get if, for example, a large oil or biogas fuel tank exploded. And I mean, I assume that from the mayoral level on up, there were massive precautions taken to prevent that. But yeah, the fear with nuclear power is that it's somewhat similar to nuclear weaponry. And I will say, in the 1970s and 80s, the Russians, who were trailing us when it came to building small, efficient reactors, contributed to that. I mean, there were donations that we now know made to the environmental movement from foreign players to kind of slow down U.S. nuke. And I would assume the same thing is happening now with some of this woke stuff. The same thing's happening now with some of this white guy and black guy going at each other's throats online stuff. It would be pretty easy for a Chinese agent to exacerbate a lot of these fights with $10,000 here and there. But I'm very for nuclear power. I think it's time for the panic to end. If France can manage it, we can manage it.
Yeah, because the French can't manage much. You know what I mean? So a buddy of mine who was in the Navy, Frank Troy, he said a joke to me. I got to give him credit, because if I don't, he gets very upset. But his joke was, if you ever want to buy a used gun, buy a French one, because they've only been dropped once. And I thought that was hilarious. Just drop them and surrender, and then, you know, sell it on the market for cheap. So,
yeah, I remember once when I worked on a sales and trading floor in Chicago, this European was ranting about how Americans were ignorant of Europe, and he suggested that none of us knew what the French flag looked like, and some wit piped up, it's just a white square of cloth, right? Like, what you surrender with. I mean, so that's the stereotype of France. Like, you know, why do they have so many tree-lined boulevards in Paris? Germans like to march in the shade. But the important point, though, is that the Europeans, who in reality are perfectly sophisticated but are at a lower level of tech than the United States, manage a nuke. France is powered primarily by nuclear power plants. There's one in Avignon. I don't really see why we couldn't do this. I don't see why we couldn't locate them, for that matter, near Louisville, near heartland cities that are low-risk military targets, and just start running the grid that way. Solar and wind power, I'm not an expert. I tend to suspect that's very unreliable.
I would, too, considering the sun doesn't always shine and it's not always windy. I want to play a clip for you, Dr. Wilfred Riley, if I could. Again, the book is Lies My Liberal Teacher Told Me, and you should order it today. It's outstanding, debunking the false narratives, defining America's school curricula. Every parent should read this book, needs to read this book, mandatory. This is Stephen A. Smith. He was criticizing Barack Obama's appeal to the brothers before he hopped on his flight and went back to Martha's Vineyard, implying that the brothers were not backing Kamala Harris because they're sexist MSI. Misogynistic. Take a listen and get your reaction.
Before I go any further, I want you to hear exactly what this man had to say.
I'm speaking to men directly. Part of it makes me think that, well, you just aren't feeling the idea of having a woman as president. That's not acceptable.
Respectfully, President Obama, what you said is not acceptable. Is it possible that the only reason some black folks may not be inclined to vote, or they may be a bit disenchanted, or dare I say may even be willing to go as far as voting for Trump, is it possible that it's policy as opposed to misogyny, inflation, the cost of living, the price of gas, the price of groceries, that don't matter? Immigration and our borders, and this belief that there's an elevated level of sensitivity towards them, as opposed to black folks struggling, if not starving, in this country. Yes, that plays a role too. When the mayor of New York was talking about $53 million in prepaid credit cards for immigrants who came across our borders illegally and having prepaid credit cards for them, and I said, wait a minute, black folks been starving for years, we ain't get that. You don't think they notice?
Pretty fired up there, Dr. Wilfred Riley. Stephen A. Smith, very fired up.
Yeah, I think you hear the same thing for people that are speaking for poor white communities in Appalachia. I mean, people are speaking for legal immigrants to the USA. Yeah, so one of the things that the left does, since we were talking about woke earlier, is try to brand any perfectly legitimate hostility toward them, because they're mostly a minority and female movement, as racism and sexism. So, like, why wouldn't you vote for the highly qualified Kamala Harris if you're not a racist? And the answer is, well, because I prefer the other, better qualified candidate in the race who's been president before, right? I mean, there's no logical reason to assume sexism. Like, I'd love to vote for Margaret Thatcher for president.
Yeah.
But she's not running. So I think that even Condoleezza Rice, I mean, even Hillary Clinton's a better candidate than Kamala Harris, who one of my buddies jokingly calls Black Hillary. I mean,
I'm never going to not think that
kind
now.
Of fake, yeah. I mean, it's literally the same Macy's upper end line pantsuit worn with a ridiculous amount of jewelry and stuff. But anyway, the whole point, though, is clearly there are many reasons to vote against a Democratic candidate who seems as aggressive and as incompetent as Harris does. So just having to fall back on racism, sexism, I think people are kind of tired of seeing that card played. And we see this everywhere. We see this with movies, where when Ghostbusters or Star Wars tries to do something absurdly woke, like he's the young black Jedi that's going to destroy the Jedi. I mean, like, the general reaction is hostile, and then the comeback is, well, fans are very reluctant to embrace a new diverse America. And that's not really the issue. You've seen massive diversity in movies, Friday Night Lights, for 50 years. The issue is being told things people don't want to do by people that seem to be incompetent.
Just to echo that point, Politico had a piece today about Harris's eroding support with Latino voters in Pennsylvania. And they spend the first like 10 paragraphs saying how Latino men won't vote for a woman because they're all basically sexist. And then you get to like paragraph 57 and it says this. Instead, Latinos frequently cite the economy as their biggest issue heading into November, which remains a weakness for Harris. But you got to get past all the other part about, you know, a bunch of Latin men who I guess are just basically like Tony Montana from Scarface, who are like, you know, I'm not voting for no woman, you know, and then to get to the part where they're actually just like, they just don't like her position on the economy.
Yeah, it's extremely annoying. I mean, as a black businessman, I hear this maybe 2-3 times a day. I can't even imagine being a white guy with the same, you know, income and political profile. It'd just be off the charts irritating. You can actually measure this, you know, like there are a series of questions that people are asked, like, what's your number one issue? Race relations is on the list. Like if someone wants to say, you know, I have problems with the diversity of America, you can specifically ask, would you not vote for an Afro-American candidate? That's on some polls. What we find is that that's not really all that predictive. Like the main reason people voted against Barack Obama, who got 44% of the white vote, is that he was a liberal Democrat. So wokeness to some extent is ignoring everything else, all 9 other variables in the poll, and just looking at race. And that's pretty aggravating.
So well said, my friend. So well said. You nailed it. I love it. Lies my liberal teacher told me, debunking the false narratives, defining America's school curricula. Get this book. You need to read this. Have a great weekend, buddy. And I look forward to chatting with you again next week. Really appreciate it.
Same to you. Talk to you soon.
It's the 5 o'clock happy hour on the Rick Cioli Show. Brought to you by the Oceanfront Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. A premier full-service resort and conference center. GrandHotelCapeMay.com.
And don't forget, we'll be back at the Grand Hotel for our next live show coming up on December 20th. Our Christmas Spectacular, Cioli Show Christmas Spectacular on ice. It's going to be great. Big story of the hour brought to you by our buddy Dr. Mike Veneria, VeneriaDental.com. I want you to mark down November 9th for the annual Veterans Breakfast and free shredding event at his office in Cinnaminson. Come get some coffee, cake, donuts, and pizza. Bring your documents that need shredding. And coming up next, and we're going to stream with him, Dinesh D'Souza. So if you're watching us on YouTube, you're going to get to see Dinesh. We'll talk about his new movie. So please join us at youtube.com/1210WPHD. And I want to remind you, you know, we broadcast live from the Cherry Hill Volvo Studios, even when I'm at the Zioli compound. Relationships matter at Cherry Hill Volvo. You hear me say that a lot because it's the guiding principle of how Judith and her team run their business. And they have an incredible offer right now. All kinds of great, incredible fall offers from Cherry Hill Volvo. Like, how about a 2025 XC40 for only $435 a month on a 36-month lease? Or a 2024 C40 for only $329 a month on a 36-month lease. And you can get 3.99% financing on select new Volvos for 72 months. I mean, that's an incredible, incredible percentage rate when you think about how high interest rates are right now. 3.99% financing on select new Volvos for 72 months. And most importantly is the treatment, because at Cherry Hill Volvo, you will be treated the right way. They're going to take great care of you. And Judith prides herself on always doing the right thing. So what are you waiting for? They're the region's most accessible Volvo dealership on Route 70 in Cherry Hill. And hey, maybe you want to go with the S-Class, made right here at their plant in South Carolina in the United States. Or maybe you want the XC90, the family car that we drive. It's the official Zioli family car. Either way, with 3.99% interest rates on 72 months at Cherry Hill Volvo, it's never been a better time to get there today. And the 2025 XC40 for only $435 a month on a 36-month lease, you just can't beat it at Cherry Hill Volvo, where relationships matter.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is a big deal. Big deal to have a guest streaming live with us right now in our YouTube stream. And thank you for being here today. 1210 WPHD. So youtube.com/1210WPHD. I appreciate it. It's Friday. We got a lot of show ahead of us. But before our guest joins us, I want to play a little clip of his movie. Kirk, that's what you said we have, right? I believe it was a little bit from the brand new movie that Dinesh D'Souza has put out, Vindicating Trump. Here you go. Let's take a listen.
If they don't, the country and the world are in big trouble.
Someone's got to overturn the tables in the temple.
Trump jumping into the presidential race.
She's a bit worried.
Of the Apprentice guy?
You know the feeling of power. Could you handle it or would it devour?
They fear that power. You didn't do an insurrection. Had you called for one, there would have been one. Mm-hmm. And there would be one if you called for one now.
I'm not sure I want that power. I want the power just to make the country better.
America first!
And that scares them.
A lot about Donald Trump scares them.
Let's look at everything. Campaign, his family. Let's get foreign eyes on him.
We have one target. You know who he is.
Going after their companies, their families. That is a dictator.
It's a very dangerous time for our country.
The goal is to put him in jail because they're so afraid of his voice.
I am your voice.
We'll bury him so deep in legal, it'll bankrupt him.
Broke Donald in jail right before the election.
That's sorry for being that guy, but isn't that election interference?
It's not interference if we do it.
We just want a free and fair election.
Sounds expensive.
Ballots ain't cheap.
Wait. Did you actually say the word buy the ballots?
We were able to purchase 10,000 ballots.
That's terrifying.
They cheat in many different ways. That's all they're good at.
Ready to save democracy?
We need to stop him permanently.
And that person will be risking his life.
Too bad it's not the 60s, right?
It's the way you survived.
I said, get me up.
Trump has beaten back every attack against him.
It's like the damn Terminator.
We're going to fix our borders, and we're going to fix our elections. We're going to win.
This is my legacy.
Vindicating Trump.
The best is yet to come.
Only in theaters September 27th.
And joining me now is the man behind the movie Vindicating Trump, the one and only Dinesh D'Souza. Dinesh, welcome back to the show. How are you today?
I'm doing great. I also want to mention, too, that there is a book that goes alongside the movie. So it's a book and a film, and the website is vindicatingtrump.com.
Excellent. Is it still only in theaters, or can people stream it at home now?
No, the movie is now out of theaters for the most part. It's available for streaming on multiple platforms. There are DVDs that you can get. VindicatingTrump.com is the place to do that. The book, of course, is available everywhere.
And just today, is that your timing is impeccable because, of course, now the non-special counsel, because he's not a special counsel, Jack Smith, he's an obsessed lawyer, and the judge in that case, Judge Chutkin, releasing more papers today, essentially, in that case, you know, 2 weeks before an election, because they want him tried in the court of public opinion, Dinesh, and it's just outrageous.
Yes. In the film, we discuss how it began with clerical assassination, then political assassination, then lawfare or legal assassination, and now, of course, the two actual assassination attempts. So it never ends.
It never ends, and that's why you made the movie. So first of all, for people that don't know, this movie is a little bit different for you. It's funny. Trump's in it a lot. You spend a lot of time with him. Some other, obviously we heard some other people in the introduction there who were part of this movie. And the reaction's been great. I mean, people are really enjoying it, Dinesh. But it's also serving a very important purpose, too, which is to remind everybody heading into this election that they will stop at nothing to try to destroy this man.
And it's worth asking why. What is it about Trump that makes him such a scary guy? Because they keep saying that he's a threat to the country, he's a threat to our constitutional republic, he's a threat to democracy. Of course, what they really mean is he is a threat to them.
Why is he a threat, in your opinion? Like, what makes Donald Trump a threat to them?
I think that it all has to do with Obama's massive project of remaking America, a project that involves not only moving away from, but suppressing large elements of what makes America, America. And Trump stands in the way of this remaking project, which is why the Democrats have become increasingly tyrannical. Tyrannical not just against Trump, but also his supporters. If you think about all the characteristics of tyrannical societies, things like mass surveillance, systematic censorship, criminalization of political differences, trying to lock up the leader of the opposition party, political prisoners, all those things are now in our country, but the danger is not coming from Trump, it's coming from the left.
We're streaming live on YouTube right now with Dinesh D'Souza. So join us at our 1210 WPHD YouTube page. It's great to have him on the show with us right now. It really is. And the left, Dinesh, what they do is the weaponization of government to such a degree. And we've never seen this before, but you've experienced this personally. So you have seen this before. But to this level of interference by our government and weaponization that we're talking about right now. And at the very same time, you know, they come out and they say that Trump is going to be a dictator, that Trump is going to be a fascist. I mean, the police state tactics, and that's your other great work, police state, that's what the Democrats are employing here. I mean, these are the classic, when I learned about what a police state is in Political Philosophy 101, I mean, it's everything that they're doing to try to stop their political enemies. And also, I should mention, too, to suppress the people and silence them into intimidation so that they don't speak up.
Trump is the only guy I know who can rope-a-dope his way out of this. I think you know that any other Republican facing three criminal charges, let alone 91, would have been completely undone. They would have exited the race, never be heard from again. Trump somehow manages not merely to endure, but to forge ahead. This is a man who has political bravery of a kind I've never seen before. You saw it also in his reaction to the two assassination attempts. I mean, can you think of a person alive who would have responded to the two assassination attempts like Trump? He's quite literally in a class of his own.
Dinesh, when you were making the movie Vindicating Trump and the book as well, I mean, all of this seems to have backfired in their faces. You know, it seems to me like they decided, all right, Trump's the easiest one to beat, so let's go after him, thinking that that would help him get the nomination. But with general election voters, I mean, they see the way the government comes after him. They see the assassination attempts. They see a very strong man fighting back and fighting back for them, you know, saying they're coming after you. I'm just standing in their way. Have you found, Dinesh D'Souza, that this has helped him increase his popularity, not just obviously among the Republican base, but with independent voters as well?
The reason that the election is even close, if we had a fair media in this country, it would be a landslide for Trump. But the mainstream media knows that their coordinated propaganda is aimed at the independent voters, and often they are the only source of information that those voters hear about. We never get conservative media. They are not exposed to a rival point of view. And yet, despite this propaganda, I think more and more people are seeing through the fog and recognizing that Kamala Harris is a hollow vessel. She is a ventriloquist dummy for a regime that has been running the country even under Biden. And that Trump is not the caricature that the left has made him out to be.
The forces that want to stop him, Dinesh D'Souza, as you were making Vindicating Trump, how much of this is also driven by the war industrial complex? You know, I was thinking about this mayor, this Muslim mayor in Michigan who endorsed Trump today and saying that we're going to have peace if Trump gets elected. You know, Russia didn't invade Ukraine when Trump was president. October 7th didn't happen when Trump was president. And we're going to have peace here. But that's a threat to a lot of people. I mean, there are a lot of people getting very, very rich off of not only just the Ukraine war, but just war in general.
Well, here you're touching on a very profound point, which takes my mind back to the Reagan years. When I was a young policy analyst in the Reagan White House, we knew that government was a racket in the domestic level. We knew that the welfare programs were run like a racket. But we had a blind spot when it came to the Defense Department. Even though there were reports about the Defense Department spending $500 on a coffee pot, we either would say that's not true, or we would say that we're fighting a Cold War, so we should pretend to ignore that. And a lot of Republicans have made full careers and gotten very rich off the great inflow of cash that has come their way from Boeing and Raytheon and Lockheed Martin and so on. I'm thinking of people here like the Cheney family, Dick Cheney. And so for people who are puzzled, like why would a Dick Cheney, why would the Cheney family turn against Trump? It's because ultimately Trump is exposing the foreign policy racket and the domestic racket. And there are Republicans who have benefited greatly from the former.
Go to VindicatingTrump.com. You can buy the DVD. You can stream it on Rumble and a number of other sites as well. Dinesh D'Souza is with me. We're streaming live on YouTube right now. There's even a great statement by President Donald J. Trump on Vindicating Trump, which you can watch on the website. You'll see some people who are great friends of the show, like Laura Trump on the show in the movie as well. And the great Nick Searcy, who is in all of Dinesh's movies, just a phenomenal actor, one of my absolute favorites. And so, Dinesh, not just the war complex, but there's other complexes, too, right? Like something Tulsi Gabbard has said, which I really appreciate, and Bobby Kennedy has said, too. The pharmaceutical complex, the food and drug complex, and then the intersection of all these things. And that's the, again, another threat that Trump represents. The swamp creatures, I mean, think of the swamp or whatever you want to call it, the federal Leviathan, the deep state, whatever. I mean, these are people that are getting insanely rich off of even things like just the over-medicating of our society as they continue to pump out food that's just not good for us.
That is absolutely true. A lot of businesses have figured out that they don't need to be for the free market as long as you can get government to do your bidding. If you can get government to shut down your competitor, if you can government to mandate people buy health insurance that you're selling, if you can get government to force people to take a vaccine that you're producing and getting government money for, these are rackets that are going on across the board. I think Trump, even in the first term, didn't recognize how deep the swamp is.
Yeah,
I think he knew the media's left-wing, academia's left-wing. I don't think he knew that the FBI is left-wing and corrupt, or the CIA, or the military, or that you couldn't trust the people in the white coats at the CDC or the NIH. So Trump in the second term is far more dangerous because he's now, I think, aware of the magnitude of the problem.
I agree. And I think he has said so. I mean, early on when he got in there, he brought a lot of the Republican Party hacks who were against him, you know, into the White House. And I definitely think he's learned that lesson. No question about that. I also think you raise another great point when you were talking about vindicating Trump, and that is that his appeal now to black voters, Latino voters, other voters who have seen the government target them. I mean, let's just take black voters, for example. I mean, when Kamala Harris was prosecutor in California, she put away 1,900 people, black people, for low-level pot crimes. There's a black woman who just reported to federal prison because she was praying outside of an abortion clinic. I mean, I think people can empathize with him because it's like, hey, listen, the government's been going after me my entire life, too.
This is quite true. We opened the movie with that famous scene of Trump coming down the escalator at Trump Tower. And I think upon reflection that scene tells us a lot more than it does at first glance. It's almost like you can imagine the cultural elites at the top of the escalator. There's Oprah Winfrey up there and Ellen DeGeneres and all the others, the Hollywood people. They love Trump. They want to be photographed with Trump. He's cool. But then Trump does something very fateful. He gets on the escalator, he descends, he goes down. So who's down? Well, a forgotten American, the guy who's been screwed over by both parties, the guy whose job has been traded away. And that guy looks up and goes, hey, look at this guy. He's not one of us, but he's taking up our cause. And so they become very loyal to him. But meanwhile, from the point of view of the elites at the top of the escalator, Trump is leaving us. He's selling us out. He's going and joining those pitchfork people and taking up their cause against us. So So here you can see in a snapshot why the same people who once adored Trump turned so viciously against him.
That's a great analogy, Dinesh. That's why you're such a brilliant filmmaker. Excellent. I never thought about that before from that perspective of just the symbolism of that. Well, that's why you're making movies, my man. That's great. Let me ask you this, too. When we're thinking about this coming election and what the Democrat Party was able to pull here, a coup against Joe Biden, and they were able to achieve that and take him out at the very same time they scream about democracy's in peril and Trump's going to destroy democracy. And I mean, we watched the Democrat Party take out a sitting incumbent, duly elected Democrat president.
Yes, although I think the problem is even worse than that or deeper than that. Because think about it this way. How did that incumbent president really get in? The same junta, the same gang told Joe Biden, we won't have a primary for you either. Mm-hmm. We move you to the front.
Yep.
And you are the face of the party, but you're not running the party. We run you. And you can sit in the canoe, but you are not steering the canoe. And if we decide to get rid of you, you have to go willingly. I think that Kamala Harris is coming in on the same deal. If at some point she becomes inconvenient, they will hit the eject button and off she goes. So what this means is the Democrats are no longer running a party in the normal sense. A secret gang is running the country. It has been for 4 years, and the Democrats are offering to have the same gang run the country for the next 4 years with Kamala Harris as their ventriloquist dummy.
Yeah, so well put. Listen, I love the movie. It was great, and I really recommend it. So go to VindicatingTrump.com right now, VindicatingTrump.com. Buy the DVD, stream it, get the book. Dinesh D'Souza, it was great seeing you in person like this. I mean, online, but still, you know, streaming with me here today. I really appreciate it. This was great. Thank you so much.
I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
We'll talk again soon. Dinesh D'Souza, Vindicating Trump, VindicatingTrump.com. Thank you, my friend. And as we continue along here, we have our fourth and final hour straight ahead on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. We're going to get into election integrity. What is the nonsense the Democrats are pulling now? More reaction from the Al Smith dinner. I got a big hour straight ahead. And shameless plug tomorrow night. 10 p.m. Fox News Channel, Fox News Saturday Night with Jimmy Failla. I'll be on the show, so tune in, set your DVR. We'll be right back.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events. Major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories. The unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.